chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomano. She's Stephanie Koenig. He's Frank Fee. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Full house this morning. S&P futures, whack, down 2250. Dow futures down 203. NASDAQ futures down 75 as we're... Well, we started down pretty much every day last week. It ended up. But this is a little bit of a...
New week, new thing?
Kind of a new week, a new something. Anyway, we got... New mining to buy Gold Corp. You guys got any Gold Corp? Frank, you got Gold Corp?
No, I do not.
Well, what the hell? You're supposed to know all this stuff. Or else why would we have you on the show?
Well, I used to.
Yes.
And now I prioritize.
I see. You only go for takeovers that more money than that one. That was a little takeover. You only like the big ones, $40 or something. So what's going on in the world other than China's
deficit? The last $40 takeover I played was a takeover. Superior Oil.
Oh yeah, yeah. Steph, you remember Superior Oil?
No.
Oh, so she's too young.
T. Boone Pickens.
Well,
going to take it over.
I do remember that. I just I don't think I was in the oil business or paying attention to those commodities at the time.
The Superior Oil was a stock on the, with a brown badge. So you were, that was on the old Midwest Options Exchange that actually was taken over by the CBOE. So my first badge was a brown badge. So I technically was on the
Midwest. Mine too.
Yeah, and they end up, so Superior was one of the stocks in there. You got to trade 20 stocks. It was Revlon. See who else was in there.
Northwest Industries,
yeah,
Blackwell,
Litton Industries. You might ask yourself, Chrysler came after. That was a pick. That came later.
Okay.
Because they were number one. If you lost a stock, Steph, the next time the stocks came out, you got first pick, which was sort of weird. And they decided no, you couldn't do it that way because they had to be competitive, even though you'd rather have them competitive in a pit, I would think. But then that would not be nobody would want my point of view on this. So that way, if you competed between the firms or the floors, the different exchanges, that way the competition could be how little regulation you gave the member firms.
Interesting.
Yeah, which
obviously backfired.
Well, yes, it did. So anyway, the. But when you ask why was Litton Industries a key stock, Frank, you remember this, before 1984, the Tax Act of 1984, people who were on the trade, professionals, were marked to market, were not marked to market. They actually paid taxes on completed transactions. You remember those days, Frank?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you had a portfolio like mine, guys were obviously a lot bigger than I was, but I had a lot of stuff all the way around the floor because I traded in a spot, and then I would look for spreads and all the other stacks on the floor stuff. So I would have sometimes positions in, I don't know, 25 to 40 other stacks. And every other day, well, actually it came down to maybe weekly, you got your haircut sheets. And this is why when listeners understand why I'm, a little daffy when it comes in their mind, although not in my mind, how you look at your portfolio, your haircut sheets, and your graphs. The only price you ever see on there was the closing price from last night.
Right.
So, and then once in a while, you'd get this thing that came out called a status. And a status, for my stuff, it had to be, what, Frank, inch thick? And it had every mm-hmm. single position I had and every single option what I paid for.
So believe it or not, when I started in the option industry, we had tables too.
God. You had real tables.
We had the stock, or the option tables, right?
The we have a quick call in from Mr. Kevin, because we had a I was talking to him over the weekend because I was bored driving to Detroit and back. Notre Dame put, well, I'll let Kevin talk. Notre Dame put another gentleman in the Hall of they don't have a, basketball Hall of Fame, but they call it a ring of honor, where they put your jerseys up and so forth. And some of the people they put in, it's always interesting the story that comes from behind them. I mean, they put Kenny Hawkins in, not Kenny Hawkins, what was his name? The Hawk, what was his first name, Frank? The Notre Dame Hawkins. Anyway, they put him in the ring. He was the first African-American player at Notre Dame. And you, people think this is like centuries ago.
Tom Hawkins?
Yeah, Tom Hawkins. He they think this was centuries. This was 1950s, where, you know, and everybody knows that I always am, you know, kind of bitching about the way leaders lead today versus some of the leaders that I fortunately had. And when he came to Notre Dame, we were still playing Southern schools, and where he was probably not welcome. So Father Hesburgh, who was the leader of Notre Dame, not the athletic director, not the coach, not some PR schmuck, not the PR people are schmucks, he picked up the phone, he called every one of the university presidents, not the athletic director, not the coach, and he said, we have an African-American gentleman on our team, we're bringing him your way. By the way, if you, if it's a problem for you, let us tell you right now, and we'll cancel the game. And everybody, I think everybody, Kevin would know better than me, or maybe Frank, everybody said okay. But he did himself.
Well, one thing, the Hesburgh put in a rule once we started getting African-American players, that if the team could not stay together, they would not play them. So they would not put them in segregated hotels.
Right.
Georgia Tech was the only, and Miami were the only teams we played in the South. Miami Beach was motivated by money. They were integrated. And when we played Georgia Tech, they would stay in a dorm.
Well,
on campus. Which is interesting, given that that was a state-owned building.
Yeah, it was probably before the place integrated, I would guess.
Oh, definitely.
And, well, anyway, Kevin, the gentleman went in Saturday, I'll let you, ask you to call in, so I'll you give the quick story.
I'm Bob Whitmore?
Yeah.
About Bob Whitmore. So, if you come forward a few years after Tommy Hawkins, Bob Whitmore came in 1965, and, if we start the story in high school, Whitmore was, he played at DeMatha for this young coach who was trying to make his bones, named Morgan Wooten. Now, you know, most basketball fans will know that Morgan Wooten went on to become a legendary high school coach who put so many DeMatha players into major college programs. Even as recently as, his final years before retirement, you had, you know, Jaren Grant and B.J. Anya and Jeremy Grant, and there was a guy at Duke, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. So, you know, it was the program in the United States. And Morgan Wooten is in the Basketball Hall of Fame, despite never coaching a day above high school. But at any rate, they managed to line up home and homes against Power Memorial, which back in the day featured this kind of tall, tallish guy named Lou Alcindor, who, for the younger people in our audience who don't know this, Lou Alcindor later changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and went on to have a pretty fair career of in excess of 20,000 NBA points. The first year, Power won a really close game, and Whitmore at about 6'7" had to guard him. The second year, DeMatha won, and that's the game that, to this day, people still call the greatest high school basketball game ever played. It, partly because of the hype. It had, you know, national publications like Sports Illustrated covering it. So, when Notre Dame managed to, land Bob Whitmore, who was the best player on that team, although, you know, later on some of the other players went on to, better careers, most notably Sid Catlett, who followed him to Notre Dame a couple years later, it opened up a new, a pipeline, to D.C. for Notre Dame players that included the likes of Bob Whitmore, Collis Jones, Sid Catlett, Adrian Dantley, Don Williams, Austin Carr. Oh yeah, that guy was good too. Carr is to this day is Notre Dame's all-time leading scorer, and he holds three of the top five and five of the top nine NCAA scoring or NCAA tournament scoring games, and he didn't have 3-point shots to do it for doing it.
And he played defense.
In fact, a lot of people know that Notre Dame ended UCLA's record 88-game winning streak. A lot of people don't know that UCLA's last loss before that winning streak started was also at Notre Dame when Austin Carr was there, and Carr put up something like, it was either 44 or 46 points. I don't remember the exact
I was there. It was my freshman year.
It was your freshman year. Yep. My brother got me a pair of tickets to that game for a Christmas present.
Wow!
So
nice.
I was at it. The interesting story out of that is that with all of the star players that UCLA had, none of them could stop Carr. So finally, Wooden decided to put a 6'8" or 6'9" forward named Sidney Wicks, who went on to a fairly long NBA career. On the guard him, and the first time down the floor, Wicks kind of sagged back so that Carr couldn't take it to the basket, and Carr stopped and popped in a jumper. So the next time Wicks came out, and Carr blew by him, and on the way back up the court, and this was actually documented in the Sports Illustrated story, Wicks looked at John Wooden and said, "I told you I couldn't bleep and guard him."
He was yelling. It was pretty intense. I'm going to say that game was even better than the one 4 years later.
Yeah. Now the important thing about Whitmore, aside from being a really really fine player, you know, he was like a 17 point career average with almost 13 rebounds a game over his career.
Matty,
aside
13
from being
rebounds
a fine
a
player, he actually worked as a grad assistant under Digger Phelps too. He was a mentor to all those guys who came along later, because especially Phelps' early years, there were so many East Coast African-American players who would come out to South Bend, Indiana, and they'd get, it was such a cultural difference, and they'd get so homesick, and Whitmore was the guy who played big brother or dad to them, and that includes the likes of, Dantley for sure, Tracy Jackson, Toby Knight, players like that. Even David Rivers, yes, a little later on. So, he's really was a class act, and I'm glad Notre Dame managed to honor him, especially, he's in his 70s now, and some of these great former players, it's really nice when you get your Troy Murphys and Lou Kerengodes inducted into the Ring of Honor, but it's really great to get some of these guys while they're still with us.
Well, when you start talking about the rebounds, I mean, who does 12 and 13 rebounds a game now? And it's
nobody.
It's really
almost nobody.
Yeah, it's a different.
Yeah, almost nobody. Occasionally, you'll see someone who's in double digits. Heron Godey did that for Notre Dame.
And this is before
he had a couple of seasons where he was in double digits in rebounds for the whole season.
And this is when you could take 40 seconds to throw the ball up if you wanted. There was no shot clock, right?
Well, in those days, yes, there was no shot clock too, so you could slow it down. So, with the shot clock, you're going to get more opportunities, especially if your team defends worth a darn, and you get a chance to own the defensive boards.
But that was fun. So it was they have a bunch of films, or were the films all old?
They had some nice videos. They had some recorded tributes. Wooten was actually at the game, as were a whole ton of former players. So it was really nice, really nice halftime ceremony. They did a nice job with it. Collis Jones was there. I wish they would have spent more time during the media timeout showing additional videos and maybe getting into that DeMatha versus Power Memorial story and so on. But you got to get your dance cams in there.
Oh yeah, you got to get your other stuff in. I went to a few of these things, and they're pretty nice. I mean, but it was the whole idea of not being able to bring somebody to another town that was African American. I mean, this is in our lifetime, for God's sake. And we're not we're not that far away. It's pretty awful. Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you as usual on Wednesday. I almost came your way to see hockey, but the weather was so awful, I figured I better just stay right where I am, in my ruts, as it were.
Yes. The minute you try and veer out, you could spin.
That's right.
So, yeah, I'm glad you made it home safe.
All right, take care, bud.
All right, bye.
Yeah, I figured we'd have Kevin on to do that stuff because it was a, you know, these are people that you know you don't want to forget. You know, I mean, they because they weren't just.
Oh, Bob was a great guy. I was a freshman when he was a senior, and he was one of the first people that actually friended me on Facebook. You know, 10, 11 years ago.
Wow.
And he's a great fan of music.
Matty, Sid Catlett followed him, and with Sid Catlett and Carlos Jones, were on the same team as Austin Carr. So, but Sid was one of these guys that was probably 6'8". He was very, I won't use the term agitated, but he was, he had kind of happy feet. And in those days, all college refs did, if you got the ball and you basically if you farted, they called traveling. It was, you could not budge, I mean, at all. And I would say Sid would get how many traveling calls per game, Frank? And if he got the ball down low, the guy couldn't put a layup up. He got that name.
He was a defensive star.
Yeah.
He also couldn't dribble because if he dribbled, it used to be easy to palm a ball. Every dribble now would have been a palm back in those days.
It was unbelievable, man. You could not. You know, the guys come down to Florida and their hand is arguably under it a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Every single one of those was called. And if you even moved a toe, like if you got the ball underneath and went to go up, if one of your feet even moved, it was a travel. I mean, I'm going to say half the time, guys got the ball inside, they called a travel. And so between the two of those, let's just say Sid was skunked on offense. He couldn't do either one. But talk about a big, huge guy. But on defense, he had some of the thunderous blocks. I mean, but yeah, that was interesting when the guy from UCLA ran down was telling Johnny Wooden, I told him not to let me bleep and guard him. Because Austin Carr was pretty special. Anyway, I was digging through some of the stuff here this weekend, and I was obviously the market's down here this morning, fairly heavy. Still down 21 points. Frank, I talked to a couple of people before I go through my stuff here. This weekend, I really thought this week would be different than last week, that a lot of the news that's being pushed out is going to somehow come home to roost, whatever that means this week. I don't know if I'd buy that. I mean, we've been so long, really, years and years now, and how many shutdowns, not this long, have we been where every single piece of political news, give it 2-3 days to drive the market down, and then you wanted to buy it because it ended up being not political news. Yet you and I can remember further back when it didn't work out that way. Now, obviously, we'd like it to work out this way. This time, we'd love to see somewhat of a truce on the Chinese thing before we drive. And a lot of recessions have started overseas. We don't want to drive China into recession, I don't think, so especially if they owe you money. And some people in this country, they owe you money, and so you don't want to do that. We don't want to have this border thing go too much further. We don't want to have the next year being played out in the Supreme Court regarding whether or not we can have emergency powers on something that's not an emergency by anybody's stretch except one guy's.
Or have Brexit slow everything
else down. Or have Brexit. Steph knows more about that. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. You know, is there a way for the people in Brussels to back down and have somewhat of a common sense on this, or are they absolutely going to put the world in a vice because they're pissed off at Britain for wanting to leave? It looks to me like that. I mean, all these things I just mentioned, all three of them appear to me to be self-inflicted. What do you think, Frank? Is the market ever going to say, we're going too far, this is screwing us up too bad, or what?
Oh, it's going to say it. The question is when.
And who's going
to
listen?
We used to be able to sort of call it, say, okay, this is when we're finally going down. And then you have a 100-point rally.
Right.
But then I fool myself and say, well, this is a bear market rally. And I don't know what's happening. I mean, the people are saying right now, yeah, there is collusion. We got it. I mean, Manafort gave the Russians polling data. That means that these Facebook posts could be targeted to the zip code level.
I don't.
That's the level of information they had from Facebook through Cambridge Analytics.
Whether or not you love him or hate him, being our POTUS, President of the United States, I honestly don't. I don't get the feeling, and I'm not a big fan, as everybody knows. I'm not a big fan, A, because I don't like him personally, B, because I think he's doing a horrible job with a great opportunity, which probably makes me dislike him even more, because he had an opportunity that most people would die for, and he's managing to bleep it up, in my opinion. Anyway, that's one man's opinion. But does anybody think, even though they may have tried really hard and they're, you know, sleazebags from out of the get-go, does anybody think that the Russians actually caused the election to turn the way it is? I do not. I mean, am I just being naive on that?
Yes.
Yes, I think so.
So you think...
You don't know.
So you think Hillary wins Wisconsin if the Russians aren't involved?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I think that they had a bigger impact than we have so far taken account for.
I don't disagree with that, but it's somehow it sounds like it should be the same question, and you guys are saying it isn't. My question is
no. You're saying we're not saying it's the difference that made the difference. We're saying it's a difference that made a difference. And we haven't quantified that, but they shouldn't have even been in the game. He was a willing participant. His campaign was a willing participant with them in the game.
Well, when you're talking about a guy on national TV asking Putin to hack into Hillary's stuff, then it's pretty obvious that he at least was sort of for it. Now, whether or not they did it,
he was definitely for it.
Okay,
I mean, he was selling it.
And because of some of the bizarre things he'd said before, people just took it as another bizarre thing for him to say. But I think we're clearly learning that there was more behind it than just being bizarre, right?
Well, am I ever going to get enough, I'm going to say there's no such thing as evidence in this world, but Steph, your significant other is
No, I think there is evidence in this world. I think the question is 100% conclusive evidence you may not get, but there's definitely evidence in this world.
I used the wrong choice of words. See, Steph hangs with a lawyer. That's why she's like this, for God's sake.
That's true.
Are we ever going to know that if the Russians weren't here, that he wins Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, or he loses? I don't think I'm ever...
Of course not.
Okay. I mean, so...
I mean, which is just fine. I mean, I think the point that we really need to learn is we need to learn what has happened so that we can prevent it from influencing future elections. I mean, we are with what we have. So, you know, Trump's in there, whether it was 100% legit or not, we're past that point, right? And now we're to the point where how do we make sure that our future leaders are either not in bed or not influenced by outside entities that they shouldn't be. And then, you know, how do we prevent that moving forward?
Well, flip the bus around. And again, I'm with you, Steph, on this, but I have to, since we had two people running, in my mind, should both have been disqualified a month before the election. How do we know if Hillary was sitting in there, what influence all the money Saudi and those other people gave her into that foundation? How do we know? How would we ever know how much that influenced them?
So I think there's two different things. One, the Supreme Court has said that people can invest, which I don't necessarily agree with their perspective on money into the elections, outside foreign money into our elections, let alone corporate money into our elections.
Actually, I don't think they've done the outside country stuff. They've done other.
I think they can come into PACs, so I think you get that kind of influence. But I could be wrong. Somebody will correct me here. But nevertheless, I think there's two different things out there. There's one that you're influencing through social media and through fake news, whatever the right terminology is, this individuals in this country versus actually putting out facts and trying to sway people using
real information. Steph, how much you hold that thought? SP futures down 20, Dow futures still down 200. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Stephanie Koenig, Matt Weber on the board, Frank Fahey on the phone. We have S&P futures now down 20, Dow futures down 200,
As a futures down 67, so not so good. But we've had a few of these days last week, and we came right around the other way. We'll see if that happens. Oil up, down 65 cents, 50.94. 10-year yield, we haven't talked about this one, 2.67. Way back down again. The Fed is maybe reacting a little bit to some of the market sell-off. You know, we'll see. DAX down 73.7%, FTSE down 74.1%, CAC around down 40.8%. So down, but not horrible, horrible in Europe, especially they had a pretty good week last week. Nikkei up 195, 1%. Shanghai down 18.7%. Hang Seng down 368, 1.4%. So mixed bag. Oil, we have, again, down 65 cents. Brent down 67 cents. The spread is now almost exactly $9. Natural gas up to 333, up 23 cents this morning. It's a pretty good move to the upside, as evidently the cold weather is sneaking back in here a little bit. This has gone from 272 to 450, back down to 270, now back up to 333. So that contract has been moving. RBOB gas, 138. We have gold rallying again this morning, 1296, up 650. Silver down a penny. Eddie, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a crash on the Kennedy Chief. Outbound side blocking the center lane just before the O'Hare extension. That's causing delays building as you're heading outbound on the Kennedy. Not affecting the inbound side as of yet. Edens looks good too. Eisenhower and Stevenson are all quiet. Southside expressways are looking good. Only other crash or concern in the area is I-80. Eastbound right at I-57 as you're getting onto the I-57 northbound ramp. There's a car in the ditch. That's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks navigate around that. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, it's going to be cold and mostly cloudy. Our high will be 32, right at freezing. We'll spend most of the day in the 20s, going up to a high of 32. Right now it's cloudy and 25 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 68. Right now it's mostly clear and 50. In sports, the Final Four in the NFL is all set, and it's for the sixth year in a row, there will only be ones or two seeds in the Super Bowl, as that's all there's left in the conference championship games. New England took care of the Chargers at home 41-28, and the game was never even that close. New Orleans rallied back from 14 down to beat Philadelphia 20-14, so it will be New England traveling to Kansas City, 1-2 in the AFC, and it will be New Orleans hosting the LA Rams, 1-2 in the NFC. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. Coyotes wish they were off. They were blown out by the Flames 7-1. Bulls and Suns were both off in NBA basketball. College hoops last night, Northwestern went to No. 2 Michigan and was blown out by the Wolverines 80-60.
We also had one more. We have Frank, but it's kind of a sort of a Notre Dame weekend. Bob Kuchenberg, legendary guard for the Miami Dolphins and played for the Notre Dame Fighting
Irish. From the region.
From Hobart, Indiana, of all places, many. Passed away this weekend at age 71.
He was on the perfect Dolphins team, right?
Yeah. He was a guy that they've tried to get into the Hall of Fame, but since they've had so many people, Larry Little, the center, I think, they've had a few people off that offensive line. Then there's always the guy who's pretty darn good, too, that can't go because all the other people on the line went, basically. He played for a team called the Chicago Owls when he got out of Notre Dame. Who the hell were the Chicago Owls? I never heard that. That was in our day, Frank. Have you ever heard of that team?
There used to be, a bunch of semi-pro teams around that were populated by, D1 players and stars from smaller colleges, or guys that didn't even go to college, from the mills.
So there were
the team history of the Chicago Owls, 1968 to 1969.
Well, there's a history
in the Continental Football League.
Short but memorable.
What was the Continental Football League? Wow.
The Continental Football League was a professional American football league that operated in North America from 1965 through 1969.
Well, the Dolphins had one hell of a team. Dan Shula, the coach. It was the famous year when Bob Greasy was the quarterback and he got hurt. And who? Earl Morrill won, 14 games, Frank, after Greasy got hurt? And as soon as Greasy was able to play for the Super Bowl, they put Greasy back in there, right? I mean, that's pretty interesting when you think about it.
The funny thing is I remember all these games. I watched them all with my father. Until you say the name, I couldn't have pulled it out of my head to save my life.
Well, the most famous one is when the Baltimore lost to the Jets, and Don Shula and Johnny Unitas always had this running feud because, and Johnny was getting up there, that Shula wanted to call the plays.
Right.
And Johnny Unitas had always called the plays. So I forget who their starting quarterback was in that particular Super Bowl, which Joe Namath said he was going to win, and he ended up winning. Well, Baltimore, they put Unitas in late, and they came back. And so the comment after the game to Unitas was, if they had put you in at halftime, would you have won the game? And he said, I wouldn't have needed that much time. 10 minutes earlier, and I'd have won it. Or something along those lines. Johnny was a strong personality. Let's say that. Anyway, I was digging through this weekend, cleaning up. But you know what you find, Maddie, as you've seen my files? You find when you keep something 9 years ago, there's a reason why you kept it. So when you read it again, you go, wow, I know why I kept this. Well, here's a good one from a guy named, Washington Blog, what the hell that means. February 14, 2013. Says, Bush was a total disaster, Obama is worse. We're talking about inequality in America. And now, this is the guy's statement. Indeed, inequality in America today is worse than it was in the Gilded Age America, modern Egypt, Tunisia, or Yemen. Many banana republics in Latin America, twice as bad as ancient Rome, which was built on slave labor, and worse than experienced by slaves in colonial America. He claimed that during the years 2009 and 2011, the top 1% of households captured 121% of all income. Which, according to, I don't know how much real stats, whoever this is, knows about the real economic stats of modern Egypt or Tunisia, but anyway, it makes for a good copy. That is, when you think about that, could you even imagine that being that way, anybody? I mean, the reason why you did that, according to him, you ask yourself, how was the top 1% able to capture more than all the recovery's income gains? They became 11.2% richer, while the bottom 99% got 0.4% poorer when accounting for inflation. That is astounding when you think about it. Just think about it for a second. I mean, that the top 1% ended up with way more than the total rise in income with the stock market and everything else, 2008, 2009.
I read a fascinating article to support all that in Fortune magazine this weekend, which just really laid out the details of how bad it is in the U.S. at this time. It was a fascinating article.
Well, you definitely get, I mean, I'm not going to accuse anybody of doing it on purpose, but if you, how's the word bifurcation on a Monday morning, Frank? Pretty good. The bifurcation you get, yeah, if you listen to, you know, Fox Business, CNBC, Bloomberg, the people sitting there and their behinds are probably making $1 million a year or some high six figures in those jobs. They've never had to pay hospitalization themselves in their life. And there's just a view of the world you get. I'm not saying it's wrong. As a matter of fact, I might even be jealous, to be honest with you. But it's not the view of the world you get if you're elsewhere. And I think elsewhere is an awful lot of places in this country. So actually, somebody asked me last week. I said, "How do you determine how the economy is going?" And my answer was, I have 7 to 8 to 10 people in various spots on the income chain. People I know that, quote, are on TV, people that have a business they own, people that are executive at a bank, and I see what each one of them is doing, and that's how I tell. Which I think is, I don't know if that's right or not, Steph, but it's unique, because the numbers, unless you see how each individual is working out, how do you know what the numbers even mean?
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of us have a lot of connections within our own socioeconomic grouping, but you really need to see the cross section of you know, society. Like, I like going down and talking to your Dunkin' Donuts ladies. They obviously work in a probably different segment of the economy than I do, for sure, and their perspective is just different.
That's very true. The people in the last, there's always somebody that is getting a new flogging or something. And I'm going to say the people that are getting screwed the most in the last, being January, the last 6 months, is anybody between the ages of maybe even as low as 50 and 65 that's getting their own insurance. The changes in insurance that have happened in the last 4 months on people who had policies last year trying to go for this year, they're more money, they're more deductible, or maybe not as, actually deductibles might have come down a little bit, but now the new thing is you're going to pay 20-30% of anything that happens to you in a hospital, which I'm thinking most people cannot afford, and because of what the hospitals charge an individual. So how, when everybody always says the government should do something, how the hell do you allow, you know, this antitrust essentially exemption in this, an insurance company area to the point where an individual could be paying two and three times at a hospital more than somebody who's quote insured? I mean, that's insane.
I mean, even I'll give an example. I had a test recently that my insurance didn't cover. The test is $18,000. $18,000.
Why didn't they cover it?
I we're still fighting it, but they said it wasn't necessary. But I mean, you got to be kidding me. One test?
Right, and probably a high school grad is the one that made the initial decision that it wasn't covered or necessary.
I'm sure.
Well, you know. Steph, without, I want zero detail. None of my business. Was this a test you could have, marketed yourself around and gotten it a lot cheaper somewhere else?
Well, I mean, the question is, it was a genetic test, right? And so the question is, I could have gone out, I guess, to the general market and gotten a genetic test for $100 on the market, but my doctor ordered it. You know, it wasn't like just something randomly I asked for. So, you know, how can you end up with an $18,000 bill for a test?
But not to mention the fact, I'm going to say, you were there an hour. There's one person there, and how they could possibly put $18,000 on the hour you were there, but any kind of cost accounting that isn't a total.
No, it was a vial of my blood. It was I wasn't even there for more than 10 minutes.
Okay, but then that goes to the lab. What
Correct.
I'm saying is, the machine, even if the machine cost, you know, $30 million, you know, if it takes 10 minutes to run through there. It's $18,000 for 10 minutes is a lot.
Exactly.
I'm going to say that the machine's capable of 100 tests a day, and they're doing five.
Well, even if it's a person that does it, how many hours in a day do we need to cover their salary?
Well, that's my point. If you look at it from a cost, they don't look at it like that. I mean, scary as it may seem, Kevin, who was just on, more than anybody needs to know. But if you're a guy over 55, you know the doctor's trying to get you to go or to give you and you have to take the test, what, every 5 years or something like that? And, you know, it's unpleasant. But anyway, everybody knows what I'm talking about without being too graphic. So it's like $4,000 or $5,000 at the hospital or something stuff. So Kevin finds a place. I think it was like Cleveland. I mean, talking about totally accredited, $750. Same thing.
Yeah.
And He calls his doctor and insurance company, and they say, well, okay, you can go there, but we're not counting that $750 toward your deductible.
It's out of network.
So how screwed up is that? That he actually paid the $750?
Yep.
Of course, Kevin paid it anyway, being, you know, he's not about to go. But, I mean, an MRI, I had one a few years ago, Northwestern. It was $5,000. Because the interesting part is my deductible was $6,500. So for your guy, your GP, to recommend you to the specialist who says, oh, yeah, go get an MRI, the specialist plus the MRI comes in at about $6,000. So it's right under the normal deductible, which don't tell me insurance companies haven't figured this out. So if you have one problem a year where you have to get more advanced study on it, I mean, if you're not going in to get your knee done, if it's just go to the bone guy, he sends you to get an MRI, that's going to come in right under your deductible. So if you don't need knee surgery, insurance company has a problem with anything. I'm gonna bet, Steph and Frank, that out of all the people that are insured, other than the checkups they'll pay for, I'm gonna say that 85% of the people never file a claim. You think I'm
really?
Way off there?
No, I think you're off on that one. I think that's right for probably car insurance.
Well, I'm saying, but I had a policy. My particular policy was I had an HSA. So I had a $6,500 deductible, but I could take the $6,500 after tax and put it in a savings account.
Right.
So I had a high deductible, and the insurance company paid like nothing. The only thing they paid for was for your once a year physical.
Mm-hmm.
So every other thing you did was you. So if you have a prescription, if you had eyeglasses, I'm saying it's unless something really bad happens to you, $6,500 is about as much you're going to spend. It covers.
That's true.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not. Obviously, if you're going in for open heart surgery, they're paying. But I mean, if you added up all the stuff you did over the course of a year, unless you know you actually had a problem, which God, I hope you never do, I'm going to say $6,500 covers you just about every year.
So I would say that's probably right for the average. And Frank, you should talk about this because I'm definitely not the average healthcare user. So,
well, I mean,
well, I also have you got to throw a family in there, Tom.
Yeah,
throw in the family.
Well, the family is 12.
It's criminal.
And the family's 12.
Where
right?
It becomes criminal is the negotiated price.
Exactly.
Yes. In 1997, I had angioplasty, two stents put in. My bill was $85,000. The negotiated price was $13,000.
Yeah, and if you went in there,
we had a quote reporter in my pit whose father had the same thing, and the hospital was suing her father for $80,000.
Yeah,
to pay for it. And I ran a scam where I said, "Look, I'll call up, tell your dad, I'll represent him," because he wanted to get a second mortgage to pay for it because he was so upset. And I called up and I said, "I'm representing, you know, Mr. So and so, and we'll give you $5,000 cash to settle it and close it." And they took it. He was going to pay $80,000 or $75,000 to settle it.
Yep.
That's the problem with health care in America.
Well, sure it is. I mean, they think they have what's the where's your man when we need him, Steph? What's the Insurance Act where they essentially get an antitrust exemption?
Oh,
but it's specific. They can share information on you.
Yeah, across insurance companies.
And they also can charge different prices to different people if they think they're different risks.
Right.
But
I have no idea what the act is, but I know what you're talking about.
Something, two names on it.
We'll look it up at some point.
But it never said, from what I read, because our buddy Robert piled it out for me after he listened to the show one morning and I was basically ragging about it. He pulled it out for me and he says, "Here's how they have the exemption." I read it and I go, "Robert, I don't see any part in here where they get to force hospitals to not compete. Where's that?" And he goes, "Well, that's not in there." I go, "Yeah, well, that's what we're bitching about, right?"
Well, actually, hospitals have a very low margin in terms of how much money they take home. They're usually 1-2% over cost, but that's partly because...
Uh-oh, don't walk down that road.
But that's a whole other story in terms of, you know, now they're taking... Now, as a doctor, you can't have a private practice. You have to be affiliated with a hospital or a group, right, which then... Those only, and that's to afford your insurance and afford a whole bunch of other services, plus all of the technical documentation and all the HIPAA things that they have to follow. So, you know, it's changed the healthcare industry. Even in the last 10 years, we've watched it change. We all had a private doctor who had their own practice.
Now you still can, but it's got to be one of those concierge things where you pay them even if you don't
right,
go.
Right.
Which is probably not a bad deal, actually. But
it's actually not. But
now, when you say, see what Steph does to me. She gets me going on this. You've walked me into this. When I was in grad school, Steph, and she's going to start. She'll get to say, "Maddie, play the Andy and Mayberry song." It was a while ago. You know, I know.
There were only 60 elements when Tom was in grad school.
Two? Bad, I thought there was two.
Just two. It was water and air, right? weren't those the original two? They thought there were only two things, water and air.
And gold.
Oh, and gold, yeah. The gold was always up there. But hospitals are notoriously messed up when it comes to... The University of Chicago had the only graduate degree in healthcare accounting and management at the time. And guess who? Here's a trivia question. At the time, there was only one grad school that had a degree in hotel management. Can you name it?
Vegas.
Yep.
Cornell.
Vegas. Ding, ding, ding. University of Adelaide, Las Vegas. Now, of course, everybody's got this stuff. But hospitals, being on the board of the CBOE, when you are a not-for-profit, which there's a difference between non-profit and not-for-profit. Not-for-profit means you're sort of like a country club set up. That's what you do is play golf. But you actually do pay taxes on any profit you may make. But the idea is that you're not supposed to make so much. It's sort of a member organization, okay? So at the CBOE, if they were ahead of the game, in 11 months, where it looks like they were going to make a profit, they would address how much they thought they needed of the kitty. And then if anything more than that, they don't want to be paying taxes essentially on members' money. So the last month, we'd pay like no fees, Frank, or something like that. So they would essentially give the money back to the members. Now other places that are a little bit sleazier will just give the money to the executives as bonuses. So when you say that a hospital doesn't make any money, Steph, it's in their mind. I took a class where a guy was getting money, the professor was getting money to study hospitals. This is back in 1975, so the idea of putting a hospital, try and figure out how good a hospital was or how efficient they were in 1970. You know how they decided what their cost per room day was?
No, but I know how they did it in 2011.
Well, I'm going to say pretty much the same way. They would take the entire amount of money they spent for the whole year, research, you name it, parking, and they divide it by the amount of rooms, nights people stayed, and that was the cost.
That's not how we did it in 2011 in New York, or four different hospitals there.
But you guys are modern. You're smart now.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, I hear you, what you're saying, but I think things have changed a bit.
Your hero, Ronald Reagan, when people...
He's my hero?
When one of the ladies dropped a child, they were 5 days in the hospital.
I know.
Then he said, well, you know, we really don't have to be here 5 days. We would cut the cost down dramatically if we booted the women out in four. So the first 6 months or a year, since hospitals were kind of set up for the amount of babies they had in the hood, whatever hood you were talking about, they ended up with empty beds. So guess what? If you do the math the way I just did it, your cost didn't come down at all, because now you just divide it by 4 days instead of five.
Yeah, well, that's part of the reason why in the U.S. we have one of the worst health care rates for babies, or I forget what exactly the correct wording is this morning, but... you know, Congress just literally passed a law to look into why our health care on childbirth is so horrible.
Well, some hospitals are horrible, and, you know.
It actually has to do partly with kicking women out of hospitals too early, and then they don't catch bleeding and a lot of things like that. But they've put a lot of money into studying exactly why it is, because we're out of the civil or out of the Western world, we have, I think, the worst record on.
I just stamped it yesterday. One of the things one of the listeners sent me a long time ago was his bill for when he was hatched, Little Company Mary Hospital in 1953. So he's a year younger than me, and he was there. His mother was there 6 days, 5 days. What do you suppose the hospital bill was?
$2,000.
Frank?
No idea.
Steph? $240. Didn't include the doctor. Include the anesthesia, include the delivery room. It was like 45 hours a night to stay in a hospital. So if you put that in any sort of inflation calculator, what does it stay in a hospital now? $2,000 a night? It's got to be $2,500. What is it?
I don't know. I think $2,000 a night is probably low.
I think it is too.
I think it's probably way low.
Well, I'm not talking about intensive care. I'm talking about just a regular room.
Yeah, I think...
They're going to fold so much into that price. I would guess it's probably
more like five.
5 to 10.
Yeah,
we got to get an expert on here other than us. When I say that, I mean Carl is. You guys listen to Carl. He's absolutely convinced that unless we get a handle on the medical stuff, both in the statistics, the numbers, and everything else, that we cannot fix the economy. As long as you have. Shall we say, happily uninformed people at the Fed and other places telling you there's no inflation when the inflation is dramatically in a section where it's 20% of the economy and you keep kidding yourself that it's only 5%. You can't even talk about inflation, I don't think. Or really anything else of what hurts people. I mean, if you leave education and healthcare out of things, How do you even have the discussion?
Well, actually, that was why this article in Fortune magazine was really interesting, because it talked about inflation of healthcare, which was something, and my numbers are not 100% correct, but it was over 200% increase for individuals in terms of healthcare costs. And then, hey, you'll like this one. In terms of alcohol outside of the home, went up 174%.
Yeah. Hey, I got one here for you, though, Frank, before we let you go, bud. I got one here for you. I found a piece of paper I threatened that I have last week. This is from Bloomberg. Americans want Congress to bring down a federal budget deficit that many believe is dangerously out of control, only under two conditions: minimize the pain and make the rich pay. The public wants Congress to keep its hands off entitlements such as Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. They oppose cuts in most other major domestic programs and defense. They want to maintain subsidies for farmers and tax breaks like the mortgage interest deduction, and they're against an increase in the gasoline tax, but they want Congress to cut the deficit. Now, when you're a politician, how do you run against that? Just saying. When people say Congress or politicians are not businessmen, they absolutely are businessmen, but they run in their own business, which a lot of other people don't understand, but politics is a business. Now, so why do you think that every politician promises everything? I'm not going to raise your taxes. I'm going to give you all this other stuff. I might raise taxes on some other guy, not you. And they all get in, and then all the rest of us say, what are they doing in there? All he did was tell a pack of lies, and by the way, we still have a deficit. What? Because you can't run otherwise. Am I right or wrong?
I think it's a very valid point.
So, Frank, thank you very much, buddy. We might need you later in a week if this market still goes crazy. Have a good week trading.
Okay.
SP Futures down 19, Dow Futures down 174, NASDAQ Futures down 64. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Algies. Stephanie Cohen. He's Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures still down 19. Dow Futures down 174. NASDAQ Futures down 66. We've got Citigroup earnings came out. They beat by a little bit because they continue to cut expenses. The stock's down a buck, trading 55, so nothing major happened there. I guess they should have done a spread. It's not going anywhere, at least not for the moment. So we have these banks coming out, and I... You know, it's interesting stuff. I mean, it may sound like we're skipping around, and maybe we are, but it's sort of all the same theme, at least to me. When you see, government involved in a lot of this stuff, and we have really had a lot of things happening that were caused by Washington, and we're in the midst of it again. I mean, we're really trading. Yep. I mean, we're not any given moment, and you'll listen to people on the show, and I will never dispute it, that along the way here, Steph, if we sell off, go up, whatever it is, if you're running up and the S&Ps go flying and all the stocks get bought, everything's going to get bought. And people, I think, listening to the show have understand that by now. The S&P futures run up 10 bucks. If you and I are in the hedging business, the first thing we do is buy all the stocks we possibly can, which might be lagging it a little bit, in a ratio that either in the S&P 500... or we truncate that a little bit and say, I don't want to buy all 500 stocks. I'll buy 80.
Top five or right?
You're probably going to do 50. You want to, not speaking for the hedge fund people, I'm going to say you probably want at least, you got to get at least 75% or before you can really count on yourself making money, I think, Steph. Maybe 70, maybe 50 on a bad day, but you can't just buy two stocks and say you're there.
No, agreed.
So you try and do is buy some piece of the basket, essentially at one price, and sell the S&P futures at another. And it gets a little trickier on the way down because you're buying the futures and you're selling stock, and sometimes you have, depending, even though the guys have morphed them into God knows what, you still have uptick rules to deal with. I don't know if professionals do everywhere or not, Steph. It's been a while since I've been on the trading floor, but I think they still have some uptick rules to deal with, so it's a little sloppier on the downside, but that's essentially what people do. But the story is, when you're a guy like David or even people on TV will say, okay, if you get 2 weeks of that, and say the market just gets their ass kicked, there's people that are just selling their same 50, 60, 100, 150, whatever stocks they are, making the money on the hedging because people are selling the future first,
mm-hmm.
and basically all stocks are down unless, somebody's a takeover or something happens. So it is incumbent upon you when that happens to look around either on the up or downside to say, okay, wow, every stock is down somewhere between 8 and 11%. The good one's down 8 and the bad one's down 11 or something. or up 8 to 11%. Is there a stock or stocks that shouldn't have been essentially spanked with everybody else or given rounds of shots with everybody else on the way up? So the answer is probably yes.
Right, you're looking for the outliers.
You're looking for the ones that, wow, they just dropped, you know, Raytheon. You know, Raytheon's down a bunch or somebody, and all of a sudden you say, well, wow, they just got three new contracts. Stock should be up, not down, right? So that's where your stock picking comes in, and that's where, you know, that starts to happen. If you're an index trader, you don't really care about any of that stuff.
Right.
Or if you're an ETF guy, you really don't care. Well, you might care, but
you're not buying the same.
Well,
way.
You're not set up. You don't have the bandwidth to do that.
Right, right.
I mean, it's really hard for, you know, somebody, you know, somebody who say manages index funds, which I think we're going to be into here pretty soon. Where okay, the next year you don't want any hedging, you don't want anything stuff, but you've got you let loose with, you know, part of your wealth, and you send me $5 million and you say, just leave me in. I want to just be in ETFs. You know, that's where we'd get, you know, Dave involved or something. And, you know, for the first 6 months, maybe we like the Russell better than the Spider, or we like the QQQ now that all the fangs have been, you know, basically clobbered.
Right.
We might try the QQQ for a little bit, where 6 months ago when the fangs were 45% of it, we want to know part of it. So there's an art to that. But even so, it'd be really hard for, if that's what we were doing for you or somebody, to all of a sudden notice that Raytheon's a buy. Because that's not what you're doing for you or for somebody else. You're just not, you know,
focused on a different strategy.
Yeah, just a different. But that other part is a strategy. But then the problem there is, if you buy Raytheon and all of a sudden the market goes down again the next day, guess what? Raytheon's probably going to go with it. You know, so if the whole market drops 40% and your stock drops, you know, 10, I guess you did good, but it's still losing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean, that's why when you look at the whole market, there's a lot of people looking at a lot of different stuff. And that's what should make it, and I think actually does make it fairly efficient. You just don't like to see so much of the driven macro news coming out of, I mean, how many times are we going to turn on Trump or one of his minions come out and say, oh God, we're talking to China this time for sure. You know, we could be down 20 spook points and all of a sudden we're up 20. I mean, how many times is that card going to get played?
Well, they're going to play it as much as they can. The question is it's losing its impact, is what it seems to be.
Well, you still don't want to be on the wrong side of it.
No, and that's why I think you still see movement. I think, you know, people are afraid more of being on the wrong side of it than they actually believe it's actually impacting the market.
Well, that's right. And I mean, right now, I like to let people know what my conflicting thoughts are. Because that's what makes a market. I mean, the person who says, you know, damn it, torpedoes, full speed ahead, I think, is, you know, we got a bull market coming. Show me that guy or lady, and I'll show you somebody who's looking to get checks for people, is looking to charge 1% to 2% to do nothing with your money except put it in the market, which is okay. I mean, I'll do that, too. But and better job and charge you less, by the way. But, I mean, that's what you are signing up for, and that's what they're going to do for you. And it's fine. But that shouldn't carry over into... Every person will tell you that the market is going to go up 10% this year, Steph. So if we're down 2, they're going to say it'd be up 12. Because that's the sales game they're playing.
No, yeah. I mean, that's what the banks and the hedge funds and everyone else, that's their standard line.
Well, and they'll tell you that the market, on average, is made 7% a year. But I think they start the day after the 29 crash, not the day before, right?
I think so. I think
that's it. I mean, buy and hold is one you bought and one you held it to, right?
Right.
But that's why the market has all these different things going. And when you start to see these big, huge swings, you should, especially if you're a longer-term investor and like individual stocks, you should have your eye on companies, maybe a 10 or 20 lot set, like David puts out in his newsletter. Here's 10 or 20 stocks that Investors Daily likes.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that you like him just because Investor Daily's like him or David picks him up and puts him in his newsletter. What it says is, here's 20. You may go somewhere else and get another 10 or 20.
Right.
But how you really, you can't watch. Right. I mean, I end up watching, how many do you watch, Steph? I watch, even in the business, I'm going to say I watch 25 individual stocks because clients have them.
Right. And I'd say since I have a different day job, I'd watch maybe, I mean, I've probably got, 15 to 20 different stocks in my portfolio, and outside of that, I probably watch maybe another five that I'm interested in. You know, like interested in possibly purchasing over time.
And I'm kind of the total opposite end of that because I traded 18 years in the OEX, and for me, the market's the market.
Right.
Which isn't to say, I would love it if, David, who's looking for these all the time, says, "Hey, Chief, it looks to me like these guys just cured cancer and nobody, and it stacks only up a buck." And here's the article saying, "Well, yeah, I'd like to buy something at $2 and 2 days later is 100. I'm as interested in a buck as the next guy, right? Isn't that what Roy Hobbs said?
He said something like that.
It's just not anything that I'm.
Right. It's not actually your focus.
No, it's not my focus.
You know, whereas as an individual investor, because I'm not looking at other people's portfolios in general, and I totally get it. Having been in the market, you're looking more at the market in general, and then you're looking at outliers either on the high end or the low end, and looking at strategies on how to handle the overall market, which is a different thing than as an individual investor. What do I personally just want to invest in since I'm making my own decisions?
Every time I've had once in a while, I clean out my portfolio of all the penny stocks.
You're a penny stock collector?
They go from a penny to a thousandth of a penny.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I've
never once had a winner either.
But yet, when we were on the score, Maddie, Mike North was absolutely convinced this gay radio station in New York was a winner, and people were calling us up to buy the stock for him, and I'm opening up accounts and everything, and I'm like the unlikely chance that this thing ever goes anywhere, I can't be the only person who doesn't have any of the stock. All these other guys are going to be rich except me. It's just the typical retail dumb. I buy I think I put $1,000 in it. I think I had like a million shares or something.
Sounds about right.
Something incredible like that. And I finally, after 2 years, I told the clearing firm, just get it off my thing. I don't even want to look at them anymore. I think they were out of it. Imagine that, the gay radio station. How much were anybody ever going to make on that?
Hey, it's actually a great concept to think you may have just been a little early.
Every penny stack is a great concept.
I know.
So every once in a while I clean those out. I'm like, wait a minute. How can you not, if the office goes down to buy lottery tickets for a buck, how would you ever live with yourself if all the people in the office with you are rich and you're not?
Oh, you'll like this. So my first stock purchase was Intel, right?
And there you go. It wasn't a bad one.
No. Well, actually, it was horrible for me. I bought it just before the kind of tech crash. But and I couldn't afford a lot, so I bought 3 shares. So I still have those 3 shares today, and I've gotten rid of plenty of other things that I've owned. But getting rid of 3 shares is really difficult.
Are you in the dividend investment program?
I am, but I am in the dividend investment program, but I still only have 3 shares of Intel.
See, now, if you were at PTI, either through our electronic platform or our regular platform, we'd take care of it for you.
I didn't say it wasn't possible. And hey, you know what? Maybe I'll drop them off at your front door and say, "Hey, help me."
You're gonna give us a certificate with 3 shares? It'll cost more to get into the system than
that's why I can't.
Oh, got the 3 shares.
I do.
Oh God, that's different. Nobody wants a paper share anymore. I mean, we do it, but God bless, it wouldn't be worth the dough.
Exactly.
What's that? $180.
Oh, I don't. You know what? I don't even look at it anymore. I look at it and laugh now. It's just.
I think Intel's in the 60s somewhere.
Kind of reminds me of certain follies in my investment career. So.
Well, my first purchase, and I've mentioned this before, was Johns Manville. I was still working for Pullman, and I started selling calls against it. So, I buy it at like 28, and I sell at 30 calls. Mm-hmm. Stock goes down to 23.5, and I'm going, that's swell. I'll still start selling at 25s. Then the stock goes to 18. Finally, it's down. I finally sold it at like 8 or something. I had no idea that this asbestos thing was cooking up. And then the weird part is, I go, all right, my first stock buy was a clunk. You can't win them all, right?
Nope.
They used to say in poker, you don't want to win the first hand, it's unlucky, right?
So, I think it gives you too much confidence in life.
The last thing you want to do the first day at the racetrack is win.
Right, exactly.
But anyway, so years later, I read this article about Jan Mansville and how the first day the thing started going down, only idiots, me being one of them, didn't realize the stock was worth zero. That the incredible amount of of lawsuits and things building up that this thing had nowhere to go. Yet I can cite that as I was managing money from people, you know, back in the 1990s, early, you know, I could never buy any of the tobacco company stocks. Maybe it was because of my experience in John Mansville, but I could never buy any of those from my clients.
Yep.
And they would, you know, people would say, hey, how come you don't have Philip Morris? Look at the dividend. You know, I can't, when there's, how many lawsuits?
Was that because of your experience with the asbestos?
That and the article, in other words, there had to be hundreds and hundreds of active lawsuits in every one of those companies the entire time.
So. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you gave me $1 million and I put $800,000, which I would never do, into Philip Morris because they paid a kick-ass dividend and the stock never seemed to go down, which still doesn't, and they still pay a dividend, and all of a sudden something happened, how would I answer the question, Chief, out of all the stocks out there, why did you have to put all my money in one that you knew had 400 lawsuits?
No, I think that's...
And yet, they never got tagged with anything until finally they got to the point where they got so big they had this state settlement, and it ended up being something they were saving for, and you know, something that I won't say it didn't harm them because it was a lot of money, but stock never really went down. I mean, right? I mean, it went down a little bit. So why would you not think that they wouldn't wiggle out of it? The whole tobacco industry did. So just because, I mean, it's PG&E right now. I mean, this is a perfect example. We talked earlier in the show, if you weren't listening from the start, PG&E is the utility in Northern California where all the fires were. Now, they've been... I don't know, Matty, are you still thinking that those are the guys who started it? I don't know if that has legs or not, but they claim, was it a downed wire or somebody was messing with a wire that started that huge fire that knocked out all these houses and everything? Anyway, they've had a huge problem with transformers. Everything, you know, their equipment's basically screwed. I don't know how much insurance they had, who know, you know, whatever. But now they're teetering on this bankruptcy thing, but they're still trying to get a bailout from the state. And the Fed and anybody else who write a check, right, stuff?
Yep.
So right now, I'm sure if you got everybody in a room on CNBC or Fox, there's going to be three guys or ladies saying they're going to get a bailout, nobody's going to let them declare bankruptcy, blah, 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 blah. And oh, by the way, the stock is a raving buy right here.
Yeah, they got $30 billion in liabilities.
Yeah, and then now somebody else is going to say, these guys, tomorrow morning, they're liable to declare bankruptcy. And the money you spent for the stack is going to be zero. Stack guys won't get anything. And there's people running around now picking up the bonds at whatever percent of the buck they're in. And they're going to be in the room. And the only people who are going to get the new stack are the bond holders, just like happened to United Airlines and a couple of the other ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically the shareholders got Bupkis. And everybody else, you know, if you got in the room, you got something. General Motors, I mean, then the bond holders and the unions get the stock in the government?
I think that's true.
Pretty much you as a shareholder, you got nowhere. So this happens kind of all the time, right? Now you're betting on the outcome of what? Of the state of California. Now the state of California loans them, you know, $20 billion to get rolling on and putting the wires and stuff back in, gives them a decent rate. I'm going to say stock climbs right back up, Steph. I mean, not to where it was. I mean, they obviously have issues, but I think it probably goes up from here. But this is not a quote investment decision at this point.
No, definitely not.
And you know, if you had to make a call here, and I mean, we'll do it this way, Steph. What if you know, we also this year we're going to expand some of our stuff other than the Protect Index program. We're going to have a dividend program for people. Now, what if? Out of your 15 main holdings in the dividend, and I don't know much about PG&E, but I'm guessing they paid a decent dividend like most utilities. What if that's one of your 15 main holdings? Now, do you puke it out here, or if you do puke it out here, and all of a sudden a year from now it's back up 30%, what do you tell that client?
Well, this is the question, since my husband does own quite a bit of it.
Ah,
it's going to be exactly that question. What do you do with it?
It's too late to hedge. It's already down.
It's pretty much as low. You can't hedge it. Getting out of it means you get nothing for it.
Right.
So do you just ride it and take the risk?
You could do some sort of a repair, but if you did that, even you'd need a rally for that. So you're really talking about, you know, something good has to happen for that to happen.
Right.
Where's the stock down to? I haven't actually looked. To be
12.
Honest.
I think it's this.
Where did it start?
Let's see. It was in the 50s, if I remember. I had a chart here a second ago.
So you could do the mean, you can do the, you know, the 12-15 repair. But that's not going to help you much.
Right.
What is what's your husband think? Are they going to wiggle out of it somehow, or are they toast?
I don't know. I actually was just going to say I had to call him after this and talk to him about it. I know he's been very unhappy with with the outcome of this, because he's had the stucco a very long time, and you know, it's been a quality.
Well, they just announced announced his plan to file for bankruptcy. But how much you want to bet they're working the phones like mad people to try and avert that?
Well, I'm sure the state is, because they go into bankruptcy. What does that mean for them?
Well, that's a good question. Well, who's out there right now repairing lines, or is anybody?
Well, I think it depends probably on what lines are down. To Sun Valley, I'm assuming they're not repairing anything since there's no one living there. But
yeah, that's another issue. Who's living where?
Right. But, you know, they had to have fixed some of it, because you couldn't have left people without. We'd be hearing about it on the news.
How much is insured, do you think? Some of it's got to be.
Some of it has, but not $30 billion.
How inflated do you think that number is?
Well, I think they probably looked at all their equipment. They just took a general number of everything that was in the area and just said, "Hey, this is what's liable," right? They just assumed everything's gone.
Well, that's probably a fair assumption.
Yep.
I have no idea. How fast can you put up? But if the poles are still up, how fast can you repair? I wonder.
I think it all depends on how fast you can get people out there, and probably equipment is probably your biggest. You know, if we look at Puerto Rico as any indication, right? But you know, getting the parts out there was probably, I think, the biggest part. Now they're an island, so getting it there is a little tougher than.
Well, one of the ladies who works at the Tripoli Tap, her husband happens to be my. I won't say my source, but somebody I talk to from time to time. He's one of the high wire dudes.
Ah, he likes heights.
You know, you actually go. Maddie, I don't know if you knew this or not. You actually have to go to a training camp for that.
Well, I would assume you're playing with a lot of electricity.
Well, but just the idea. A lot of people who think that they have no problem with heights.
Mm-hmm.
I think he said it was a 4 to 6 week sort of. Well, use the term class. And he says most people fall out. That even, you know, they don't mind going up once.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be up there all day, every day, if that's their job.
You know what always scares me? Seeing those pictures of those guys standing on top of the windmills, the big ones.
Yeah, well.
Fixing those things.
Well, he got hurt pretty bad once. Somebody, he was in one of those cherry pickers.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody messed up one of the wires, and it got hot and hit the cherry picker. And I think he popped out of it and landed on the ground. He was a Corey Crawford concussion for 6 months.
Oof, that's hard.
But when was the hurricane in Carolina, man? Was that last year?
The year before? Oh, no. Which one?
There was one last year. But they were all driving down there in like a van, like eight of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they got wind in Carolina. The governor said that they, or whoever it was, FEMA, they weren't going to pay union wage. They pulled in a rest stop, Turok came back.
Yeah, well, the thing that kind of kills me on this PG&E is that the CEO quit.
Yeah, she just quit. You know, when I saw this, I have to say, stuff, I'm trying to get rid of all these, any kind of, you know, ideas where you look at men and women differently. But, the thought crossed my mind, there's a peacetime general. The minute the bullets start flying, she quits.
Yeah, I mean, she started in March 2017.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that means they did not pick someone. I mean, really. I mean, this is crazy.
My mother used to say, pretty wise lady, she said, you know what? They hire these people. Most of the days, they don't have to do anything because things just go along and most people do all the work. And once in a while, when something bad happens, That's when you think you need them. That's when you're supposed to be a leader. And it turns out they got nothing.
Exactly.
Here's a lady. Wait a minute. This don't look so hot. I'm out of here.
Exactly.
what is that all about?
Right. We've got $30 billion in outlay, but I've only got $1.5 billion in cash and equivalents on hand. Okay, so maybe I'll just give this to someone else.
Steph, put your behind in the executive chair at Commonwealth Edison. I'm going to say, other than going to the Economic Club of Chicago dinners and so forth, what the hell do you do all day? I mean, it's not like there isn't a job. I mean, I know the PR, there's way more to it, and you should never minimize what somebody else does. But in terms of crisis management, what exactly do you do? If you took a two-week vacation, does anybody even know you're gone? All of a sudden, something bad happens. Some earthquake hits Chicago. That's when all the money they've paid you is supposed to be worth it, where you come out there and you say, okay, you go here, you go here, you go here. Here's how we're going to get this back in 4 months instead of the 6 months everybody says it's going to take us, because I'm here leading this boat. And yet, that's not what you see.
90% of your job is risk mitigation.
Yeah.
That point. You know, I mean,
It's like a trader, Steph. 90% boredom, 10% panic, right? S&P futures down 20. Be right back, Mr. David Adelman. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Stephanie Koenig. She'll be David Andelman in a second. Well, he already is. He's just not here yet. Mr. Matt Weber on the board doing his usual fine job. S&P futures down 20. Dow futures down 188. And NASDAQ futures down 63. Now, we did this 5 days last week. Not to this extent, but a couple days we were. Every one of the days we ended up positive. We will see if that happens again today. I have a feeling that game is about over, but, you know, we'll see. Could go one more day. You don't want to be predictive of the market right now because you're always wrong. DAX down 53.5%, FTSE down 56.8%, Nikkei down 31.6%. Those guys have come back a little bit since the last time we talked. Shanghai down 18.7%, Hang Seng down 368.1%. Show the Nikkei up 1%. I'm not positive they were open. We will get that from David because he always knows that stuff. Oil down 35 cents, Brent down 38 cents. They're not down as much as they were a minute ago either. 51.24 and 60.10, so that's almost exactly $9. Natural gas with a nice bump today up 26 cents, 3.36. We must be going to get some colder weather coming our way. This is the wintertime. It was up and down with the weather predictions. RBOB dollar 39, home heating oil dollar 88. Gold rallying earlier, still up 590, was up 690. Getting real close to that 1300 number, 1295. Silver unchanged, 1565. Maybe we got forced traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash coming in on the Bishop Ford right at the I-57 interchange, the car in the ditch. At the on-ramp to I-57, so keep that in mind coming in on the south side. No issues on the Dan Ryan, Stevenson, and Eisenhower traffic building, but no accidents to report. We have a new crash on the Kennedy now. Earlier crash at the O'Hare extension is clear, but now there's a crash on the inbound side just before Cumberland Avenue blocking the right lane. So stop-and-go traffic navigating around that issue as crews work to get that cleared up. No issues on the Edens. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Off the expressways, we have a crash at 55th and Route 83. Just west of there at Hobson Road and Route 53, there's an accident as well. And then in Naperville Road at Butterfield, there is a crash. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, overcast early. Could see a bit of sunshine later on this afternoon with a high of 32. Right now it's cloudy and 26 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 68 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 51. In sports, the NFC and AFC championship games are all set. New England took care of business at home against the Chargers 41-28. They'll travel to Kansas City for the AFC championship game. And it was the Saints rallying back from 14-0 down at home to Philadelphia to beat the Eagles 20-14. So the Saints will host the Rams in the NFC championship game. And then, of course, the Super Bowl will be played in Atlanta. In hockey, Coyotes were in action. They were blown out by the Flames 7-1. Blackhawks were off. College hoops, Northwestern was blown out up at Ann Arbor, losing to Michigan 80-60.
Gee, did you see it? David, how are you?
I'm fine.
The refereeing, did you see that holding call in its center in the second game yesterday where the guy was on the ground?
I'm
a real key play.
There was a few holding calls that were key plays, but I don't know if I remember the one. Was it on the Eagles or the Saints?
I remember two or three
of them on the Saints.
It was on the Eagles where the guy was on the ground and he kind of gave him a shove, and the guy goes, "How can you hold somebody who's already down?" It was a big play. They just run off like a 15-yard run and call back and end up having a punt. I mean, it was I have to ask this question. After the incredible hype of the young lady who was the first referee or the first member of a refereeing crew
in a playoff game.
Playoff game, which, I mean, looks to me like she really is, we talk about paid her dues. She was high school, college, I mean, she's all the way up. I have to ask, what the hell is a down judge?
I have no idea what the individual roles are as far as what they're called.
I can tell you what all the individual roles are except for that one. I never heard of that. She stands next to the down machine. What she does works the down. What kind of referee is that?
That's all she does is work the downs? I'm asking.
What's a down judge? What else do you do except tell everybody what down it is?
Well, no, it's at football. Yeah, what down it is?
Yeah, what else is a down judge do?
Is the ball down? I don't know.
I thought she was going to be a field judge or a line judge or something. Maddie, the headline's been stays on the line the whole time. And he is responsible for anything having to do with the line of scrimmage, the entire play, and I think he does holding on the right tackle, my guess. The referee stands in back. He covers the quarterback in the left tackle. The umpire, although he used to stand right in the middle where the middle linebacker is, I think on first and second down somewhere else, his job is the interior line play.
So there's there's seven roles in an NFL officiating crew. There's the referee, the umpire, the down judge, the line judge, the field judge, the side judge, and the back judge. The down judge, their position is on the opposite sideline from the line judge, looking directly down the line of scrimmage. General responsibilities, they oversee the line of scrimmage, they direct the chain crew, they watch for offsides and encroachment, they rule on sideline plays on the nearest half of the field.
So is that the new name for the head linesman? Must be.
I guess. There's a line judge and a down judge, and they appear to have the exact same role.
It used to be called the head linesman and the line judge. Now it's a down judge and a line judge.
Yeah, so they have the same role on the line of scrimmage, except opposite ends of the
field. Except the line judge leaves the line of scrimmage as the play unfolds, and I think the head linesman, now down judge, which she is, that makes sense then, never leaves the line.
Yeah, it says they watch the nearest receiver for the first 7 yards of the route downfield until the receiver is clear a point of legal contact for defensive backs, and then then they turn it over to the side judge.
So is that like the entry role? Like you had to start as the down judge and then...
I don't know.
I think it's a big role.
I think it's a big role, yeah.
Matter of fact...
If you're on the line of scrimmage like that, they also inform the referee of the current down.
I think they're in charge of the quarterback going too far over the line of scrimmage on a pass, too. I think because they stay at the line.
Yeah, the line judge and the down judge have very similar roles.
Why did they change the name?
I don't know.
To screw with guys like me?
Well, I don't know if...
I'm sure it was to offend you.
You know how college and NFL have different titles? I wonder if it was just that's the difference. I don't know.
Well,
they also count offensive players on the field.
Okay. That's the same job the head linesman used to have. Because the interesting part, and I never could quite figure this out, Steph, we used to go... One of the guys in the pit was a crazy Illinois fan.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to an away game in Ohio State years ago. So we fly in, and it's pouring like you never saw. There's one cab. We pile on it. There's like five of us. And some guy goes, hey, can we share a guy? Share a cab? And everybody's like, ugh. So we let this guy, and he's like sitting on somebody's lap in the back. But these guys are all total sports mavens, people from the floor. Well, it turns out the guy is a referee for the game the next day. So, of course, now they're peppering this guy with questions, and it's the best thing to happen to anybody. This guy's in the cab with us. And for some reason, Matty, I think he said that the referee, the head linesman, and the back judge, either the back judge or the field, I think it was the back judge, always go as a team, and the other guy's filling around them. So I'm going to say those are the three key spots, and I don't know why.
That kind of is neat that they work as a team consistently.
Yeah. He says you can fill in the umpire. The umpire just can wander out there, and he covers the center and the guards. So, I mean, not anybody, but the umpire could pretty much fall in on any crew.
Right.
But evidently, the referee and the head linesman and the field, those guys are moving somehow, and different people are different guys' responsibility as the play goes on, which would make sense, right? Maybe they would have to work together. Would be my guess.
Makes sense to me.
But anyways, so now I learned something. The down judge used to be the head linesman. In her case, the lines person.
All I can think of is Living It Up when the song.
Yeah.
No.
I wonder if they changed the name because they have ladies doing it now. You can't be the head linesman if you're a lady.
Be the head lines person.
Well, yeah, they have to change the name. So they changed it to down judge.
Frankly, I mean, we get referred to as men all the time in terms of terminology, so I wouldn't be offended one way or the other.
Are you going to the thing tonight, Matty? Bachelor at the Tripoli?
Yeah, my basketball team opens their 2019 winter campaign tonight, so we will be at Tripoli. By the way, the NFL renamed head linesman to down judge recently.
Yeah, see?
Four years ago, they changed it. So I'm trying to figure out why here.
I've noticed another little thing happening at the Tripoli, Manny.
Yep, they did change it because of bringing in women.
I'm not as dumb
so
as
that
I
was,
looked.
That was pretty good, Chief.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
2 points for you today.
That was impressive.
Speaking of further encroachment at the Tripoli.
That's the only reason it was changed.
Have you noticed that when you walk in most bars, all the cool guys sit at one, and it's like the power end of the bar. Every bar's got one, right? So these guys all sit on the right. Well, now there's groups of five and six ladies that come in, Manny, since maybe because of the bachelor thing. It's a real comfortable place for women to walk in, so it's not. I've seen five or six. They see the guys at the one end. They take over the other end. And now there's a women's power end of the bar.
I like that.
Yeah. One of these days, somebody's going to be sitting in the middle, and is he going to get punched or what? By the women or the guys?
Well, I would never want to sit on the power male side of the bar, I can tell you that.
Why?
That's like the useless side of the bar.
I don't usually sit down there either.
Yeah, the drunks and the right wingers. No thanks.
Just because what's his name goes down there. Every night now, there is a right winger that piles in, and he's pretty loud and he's pretty obnoxious. But everybody takes their turn taking one for the team. Like if he sits next to you, you have to talk to him for a while and save the rest of the people.
I like it though. You know, when you get into those bars and you have, even whether it's women or men or two different groups of people on both sides, eventually they start bantering back and forth. And it's hilarious. It's one of the funniest things to sit and watch.
I have never met a nicer, more fun group than the ladies who were in there last week on The Bachelor. Plus, they were so entertaining as being ladies stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where somebody'd walk out, God, I love that dress. God, I hate it. I hate her too. There'd be knives and then there was the powder puffs all flinging at the same time. All right, David, we've saved you long enough. What's going on with this market? Is today the day we actually end up down or is today, I'm reading headlines here. U.S. trade debt.
It's actually been classic. Yeah. I mean, if you remember last Monday, we had talked that we thought that the market would go about another 1-2%, and that 66.50 and the front month future would be heavy resistance on the NASDAQ. It got there. We said, you know, 25.95 to 26.03 would be very key on the S&P cash. It got to 25.97. So, I mean, I can't sit and say that's it. It's over, you know, sell it, but that was those were key resistance areas. All of a sudden, from grossly extended on the downside, all the price momentum oscillators were not grossly extended, but getting extended on the upside, and that was an area to, you know, for those so inclined to speculatively take a little bit of a short position, and if nothing else, take some chips off the table, you know, in longs and hedge. I mean, you know, I said that, you know, Monday, and without patting myself on the back, so far it's been textbook.
Actually, Thursday is when you said you'd really hedge here, which is
right.
True. You know,
so Thursday, literally, and Friday, they really got to the resistance points.
So if you're every man, every woman walking in today, the first thing here's a set of CNBC headlines. U.S. trade deficit with China grows to a record that's likely even worse than the data shows. That's a good one. With some ugly earnings reports rolling in, investors hope bad news is priced in. That's another one. Bloodbath coming to Nissan as key Ford executive resigns amid the other guy investigation. Dow set to drop more than 200 points as earnings season kicks off. How's that for a four-lot of news hitting you this
morning? You forgot the New York Times article.
Oh, I'm reading
CNBC. What'd they say?
The politics.
Oh.
Trump.
Yeah, with further ties of the Trump campaign to Russia, and that supposedly, and I'm not backing that, it sounds a little bit preposterous, that while in office that Trump's a pawn of Putin, paraphrasing, but that was the thing. I didn't read the article, so I can't say anything, but it sounds a little bit much. But, yeah, on the other hand, the one thing about, and I'm not saying, you know, buy the break. I really think for a little bit seasonally and everything else, especially the way the oscillators have gone, it makes sense to sell the rallies. But I honestly thought that from what I know, and you're the fundamentalist, I'm just a, you know, poor chartist, but I honestly thought that the trade figures from China were actually good news. One, the deficit, while a record $323 billion, is nowhere near what Trump was touting, over $500 billion. The fact is, for the whole year, for not December, for 2018, their trade surplus was the best in 7 years, and the fact that it went way down in December is also really good news, because if you had a record or not a record, but a full year that was great, but a sharp downturn in December. Maybe that makes them talk.
Well, our imports were up. I mean, not our imports, our exports were up.
Right.
That's what really changed the that number. I mean, you can't constantly be chirping at people to dig between the numbers, but at least when you see the trade deficit number, you want to look at the import and the export number.
Right.
Because it makes a big difference. It looks to me like we're exporting more, actually.
Yeah, and we know that there was a little bit of a rush, you know, to get in before the tariffs really took effect, but once they took effect, there was a sharp downturn.
Well,
and we know that, you know, for what, the last quarter of the year, close to a quarter, they didn't buy any soybeans, which they were huge buyers.
Well, but don't forget.
I mean, I think all of that is good news. Because
well, don't forget,
it tends
David,
to make a deal more possible.
But don't forget that again, it's not like these numbers I have on the tip of my tongue, but allegedly what was the quarter, second or third, where we had a 3.5% growth or whatever it was, almost 4%.
Yeah.
That a full 0.8% of that they thought was agricultural goods being bought before the tariff went up.
Now, right. No, I get it. I get
but
it.
December.
You know, it's like seasonal factors or temporary hiring, you know, for Christmas season and that kind of thing. You know, you have to consider what's underneath the numbers.
Well, I mean, weren't the, before those guys, swigged whatever they swigged together. Actually, Trump doesn't drink, so I shouldn't accuse him of that. In Argentina, where they put everything off for 90 days, I could sort of anticipate China increasing their imports in early December because they thought the rates were going to go up the end of December, right? So maybe there a little bit more of that came into play. But the point being, my biggest basically bitch, for lack of a better term, I can't believe that who's the old crotchety guy who's the Chamber of Commerce guy? The guy from CNBC, what tells his name? I'll think of it. I can see his face.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys, the idea, it sounds to me like they're talking in the 1950s, David, that if we could put China basically on their ass, it's good for us. No, it's not. It's not good for farmers. It's not good for the Fed. The Fed's selling bonds. It's not good for anybody.
No, but I think,
Wilbur Ross.
Do we think that by having China kind of on the back of their feet, we're going to get a deal? Because they can hold out a lot longer, I think, than we can.
I don't think we can quantify the deal, Steph and David.
Well, I don't even know what deal we're trying to get.
But I mean, if we put them into a recession, and it causes us angst here, I won't say recession, but I think I can trace numbers that says we've never come out of a recession. But let's not do that right this minute. But let's say it causes us angst here, and we get some kind of a deal that, you know, saves us $10 billion a year for the next 20 years. Recession could cost us $1 trillion. I don't know. I don't think these guys are aware of the fire they're playing with. I guess I have that feeling, and I'm just a guy here in the Midwest doing a podcast with you mavens. You know, I mean, it's not like, you know, I have the chamber of the people at my command that Wilbur Ross does or the people that are economic. I just get this feeling that they're not adding this up right, that the risk is way higher than the gain.
I would tend to agree with that. But on the other hand, you know, there was a segment last night on 60 Minutes about artificial intelligence and the Chinese taking the lead and, you know, what they got going there and the technological advances, you know, that they're making far faster than anywhere else in the world, that, you know, Silicon Valley should take notice. It was a very interesting thing, and when you look at that dynamic, that, you know, this guy who's like the key guy, and he happens to be Asian, but, you know, he does stuff all over the world, and he was educated here, and then works with Silicon Valley, so it's not like, oh, he's a, you know, Chinese, you know, counterproductive type of guy. He just said, hey, here's the leadership. I don't think, you know, this thing of, you know, that's been well mentioned all over, the thing of, you know, China looks at, you know, 25-year plan and this and that and the other. You know, yes and no. I mean, they're trying to move technologically and economically at a pace, and I don't think they want that to slow down. So if it means giving in, you know, and the intellectual property and everything else is a much deeper problem that I don't know how it's going to be fixed or if it's going to be fixed or if it is, when it's going to be fixed. That said, I don't think that they want, you know, $100 billion or $200 billion or whatever the marginal amount in trade to set all these programs back that they are really taking leadership roles in.
Well, two things, what you just said, and I want your opinion, because I think what you said is very interesting in a way you didn't mean it.
Okay. That's typical.
Watch Chief's head work.
But everybody does it. I do it too. I mean, you mentioned Silicon Valley and artificial intelligence. Okay. What makes you think that our Silicon Valley, the 5 to 10 to 15 companies we assume with the place, aren't so fat and happy, worried about buying, that's Microsoft, buying baseball teams and football teams and yachts, that the artificial intelligence isn't somewhat of a competitor to them, and they want no part of that? Why not think, give me one second, Stephanie, what makes you think they're not the Merck and Pfizer of this decade, where their only thing they do now is make fortunes and money and look around for anybody else doing innovation so they can buy them? What makes you think?
Because of investment.
Yeah, and they're not actually the ones driving the industry. The big.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think they are. That's my point.
You know, there's a whole.
Now, if you look at investment in Google, in Amazon, in, you know, many others, Apple to an extent, they would not be making these investments and recruiting these young people and literally moving segments of the business into that area if they were just fat and happy and were the highest capitalized company in the world. I don't think that's correct.
It's not like Merck doesn't try and come up with it. But I'm saying, what makes you think that the next hotbed, just like any other hotbeds, won't be in Boston or Austin or Chicago or someplace, and they're hungrier to get ahead than these guys are?
Well, at the moment they are. So Austin is huge in AI. You've got a couple in Silicon Valley that are big. Amazon has bought a couple of small AI firms and has really done a huge amount of investment in the last 6 months in AI work. You know, you've got IBM, which has always been a player in AI due to Watson, although the methodology that they have been using for years is kind of old news. And so, I mean,
the Salesforce and right. Adobe and Workday and whatever, trying to use that to help manage business with software or whatever. I think the evidence is different than what you're citing, Chief.
I think we're farther along in the process than you're assuming. So AI maybe 5 years ago, I think you're totally right, but now it's kind of hit mainstream.
All I'm saying is that as time goes by, the incredible innovators of the past get old, and new innovators come up.
Yeah, and they buy the innovation of the future in general.
Which is something I'd actually like to see a lot less of, but that's just me. But why can't the next place be? A lot of what, this is getting too close to home, but I'm not going to count on McDonald's to come up with the next 10 franchises of other kinds of food people want to eat, because they're,
well, it's not their culture,
it's not they're competing with themselves.
Right. They did come up with Chipotle.
Yes. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible, but you know, what I'm saying is that let there be room for somebody else to be innovative as well and be able to get in the business, some smaller firms, a bunch of guys without $250,000 student loan things that can actually get a loan from a bank. I mean, I want to see other people involved too. Or is that being obtuse or being old?
No, I think, you know, you got a couple organizations. You got 1871 here in Chicago that fosters a lot of new little companies. You've got Austin that's done a lot. You've got New York, which has created a whole technology kind of innovation center of their own, and I'm sure there's lots throughout the rest of the country. You know, so you've got places where they are fostering this creativity. But back to the China point, I think China has focused a lot on AI and a lot on technology, and they have the ability to drive their country as a whole in a particular direction, whereas we have individual and small firms and not necessarily a lot of money behind them, you know, initially to get things like AI off the ground.
What makes you think, I'm going to lob this one at you guys, I don't know why I've got all the deep questions this morning, but what makes you think their government's any better than ours? And would you want our guys doing that stuff and think they'd do a good job at it?
I don't think it's better. I think it's just more focused.
Okay. Is it the motivation for their guys? Is it as much as ours? I could be the next Bill Gates?
Well,
I think it's more.
Yeah.
Reed,
I
think so?
I mean, this guy walked down the hall and he said, and he wasn't talking about himself, and he's obviously worth billions, but he had pictures, and not just the Asians, but Americans, Europeans as well, and said, here's a picture of every single person who started with me, who learned AI, who advanced, who went into management, who went into mergers and acquisitions, and from their start in AI, these are all billionaires.
Wow.
And there were like 70 pictures.
All right, David.
I mean,
you convinced me. Get that account over here. S&P futures down 19, Dow futures down 179, NASDAQ futures down 58. We'll see if we come right back up today or not. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
A little early. I
gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.